New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. We're back with Dr. Rodier on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show. In today's discussion, we will be focusing on some current articles that Dr. Rodier referred to in his monthly blog, reviewing medical journals. This blog is one of the most fascinating sources of information that Dr. Rodier offers the public, like this program, absolutely free, and which allows readers to catch up on some of the latest medical insights and achievements with his comments from an integrative medical perspective. Good morning, Dr. Rodier.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Maybe you could we could start out, before we get into some of this information, which is really interesting today, could you explain why you started out on this monthly project, which I think, doesn't it usually encompass like 50 different articles?
Yes. Well, I used to read 200 medical journals a month.
Oh, my God.
And
wow.
Then I began to cut back. So now I'm reading about 50 medical journals a month. And it's pretty adequate. I still find great articles. And the impetus for doing all that was that 35 years ago, when I was in medical school, the articles on nutrition, environmental issues were not as ubiquitous. And so if I felt like I needed to prove what I was saying, that nutrition is very important, totally neglected in the system even today. There are some token efforts being made now, so there's been some progress. But the point is, I didn't want to stick my neck out there and just come across as if it was just my ideas. And so I wanted to fully credit the good doctors who are risking their reputations and writing articles that oppose the dictum that we hear now, pharmaceuticals being king. So if I was going to take that risk, I wanted to show a chapter and verse to back up my teachings. And so it's just a prideful thing, I acknowledge. But at the same time, I believe that educating people, patients, is the best way to go. And with those articles and references, I've been able to do that. And of course, I went on to write books and newsletters. And with the material that I find in my perusal of 50 medical journals a month, then patients can see that there's very good evidence, very good science to the concept that our lifestyles, nutrition, environmental issues, emotional issues, get this, account for 90% of the factors that lead to longevity.
Whereas that's a lot.
The expensive stuff we're buying with our health insurance only covers 10%. Now, I'm not saying it's totally a waste, but you do the math, okay? A lot of people are going bankrupt trying to pay their insurance premiums.
There are also side effects, right, which may be costly.
Exactly.
Like you might die.
Exactly. Now, if they were to learn that eating better, these simple concepts that doesn't take a genius to figure out, cleaning up our environment, improving our relationships, those factors account for 90% of our longevity. So, in other words, finishing the question here, all the reading, all the blogging, the newsletters, the books are geared to teaching patients to heal themselves.
Right. Well, I think that's great. I mean, and I think our programs cover a lot of this information that you talk about, but it's also really good to be able to read about it, because we're kind of summarizing the articles here, and they have links to the full articles most of the time, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to read a little bit of an article to you, just so our readers know where it's coming from. It's a little bit, the text that I have is a little bit longer than I care to, because there's something in the news now. And I don't know exactly your complete point of view on this, but it's about the measles outbreak. And it's in the measles outbreak, for instance, in California, they just simply insist that people vaccinate their children now. And that's becoming a real outcry. And I have an article here. It says, More Than Benches and Bedsides on Autism. And it's about the relationship to certain environmental factors that may contribute to the disorder. What the article does is it goes into different studies that have been done to associate the association between prenatal and early prenatal exposure to environmental chemicals and the development of autism. And I'm just going to give a little summary of some of these articles, like in PubMed. There was an article on February 8th, which included studies assessing the exposure to environmental chemicals prior to 2 months of age in humans or 14 days in rodents. I guess they discovered that the rodents, which have certain kinds of similarities to human beings, results. Lots of them, as a matter of fact. There were 21,603 unique studies, of which 54 were epidemic studies, 46 were experimental rodent studies, and 50 reviews were deemed relevant, covering 152 chemical exposures. The most frequently studied exposures in humans were particulate matter, mercury, nonspecific air pollution, and lead. These were the rodent studies. And so they think, their conclusions focus on recommendations to guide development of best practices in epidemiology and toxicology, including greater harmonization across these fields. So I guess they found something, but they didn't find everything. Is that correct?
Yes, we've known about this for decades. DAN, Defeat Autism Now, a great national organization, has been saying this for decades. And the literature has been there for decades. When I was in medical school in the 80s, early 80s, autism was a rare disease that we did not expect to find. It was just a question on a test. The incidence was 1 in 10,000. Now, as you know, it's 1 in 54. And have our genes mutated in 35 years? I say no. I think it's a toxicity of the environment, stresses of life, poor nutrition, all contribute to poor detoxification of these chemicals. And so it's not so much that we have a gene for autism, although genetic fanatics would want you to believe that. No, we have genes for detoxification. True. We also have a whole lot of gut bacteria that helps in detoxification and tells the liver how to detoxify. So if we're exposed to a lot of chemicals, yes, we will start to have injuries to not just the brain, but other organs. Now, it's good to point out that there's not one single chemical or factor that contributes to autism. And that's where the debate gets complicated, because you get a lot of people swearing that the only factor is vaccines. And so that creates an environment where it's easy to argue, because the truth is always in the middle. And so I have a more nuanced approach, a view of what's causing autism. But your question here is basically, are chemicals a factor? Absolutely, they are. And I have in front of me another article from the Journal of Environmental Health Perspectives, the 3rd of April of this year, saying the same thing. But it's nothing new. So, yes, chemicals are a big factor.
Well, what do you obviously, one of these chemicals, even in this study, it was probably from the air and maybe somewhat from food, is mercury. And what these vaccinations, I mean, some doctors are emphasizing the use of thimerosal, which is a mercury derivative, I guess. And you don't think that that's a major factor, or you think it's a somewhat of a factor?
It's hard to say when you have so many factors and our kids are malnourished and so they cannot detoxify. But I think it is a big factor. As to what percentage, it's hard to say. But that's where the debate starts. So
is there real science about thermosol?
Thermosol. Oh, of course, absolutely. And since you've been hinting at vaccines, let's tackle that for a minute.
Yeah, that would be good.
It turns out that Dr. Thompson, an MD, a whistleblower at the CDC, fired. You can Google that. You can read his book. And so for the whole healthcare system and the media to totally disenfranchise anyone who questions vaccines, it's ludicrous. And I say follow the money. Look, am I saying don't vaccinate? No, I'm not saying that. We'll tackle that in a minute. But what I'm saying is that the evidence is there that vaccines have been implicated and there's a major cover-up going on. I know this polarizes listeners immediately. I beg you to look up Dr. Thompson, whistleblower, CDC, and read for yourself. But when the media, it's disgusting what's going on. 700 cases in the nation. Oh, my God, we're going to die. Now, please, over most of those cases, if not all of them, are just a little rash. Please.
Well, everybody used to get, when I was a kid, you know, everybody got measles.
Exactly. And when my cousin,
we didn't die. We just looked funny.
Yeah. When my cousin had it, I was thrown in there in the bedroom with them so I'd get it quicker and get it over with. Now, look, can it kill people? Yes, there are cases. As to how many of those 700 have been fatal, I think none of them, or we would have heard about it. So we're freaking out over a rash, okay? And further, the breakouts are in groups of people that are very orthodox, and they have a right to be, and they have a right to refuse vaccination, like very orthodox Jews or this other group in New York. They isolate themselves. And that's their prerogative. I'm not saying they're doing something wrong. So we're not putting this whole thing in perspective. Look, when you listen to the news, Johnny, mm-hmm. the CBC, CBS, NBC, ABC, evening news, you know, with the big shot national reporters, tell me, the commercials, tell me, the vast majority of commercials are from whom?
Pharmaceutical companies.
Exactly. Follow the money.
Well, I wanted to know, I think I've heard this, that this particular strain of measles is more dangerous. Is that correct?
I don't know. I sincerely, honestly, I don't know. But I have reason to doubt that. We would have heard about the fatalities. We've heard zero fatalities. So this outbreak of measles, I have to assume it's just a rash, all right? Look, again, I'm not saying don't vaccinate. I'd be happy to vaccinate for measles if they took out the mercury and they took out the mumps and rubella. See, it's the MMR lumped together, right? Mm-hmm. Mumps and rubella, those two have been shown to be worthless. So why are they there? I say let's isolate the measles vaccine, let's take the mercury out, and then whoever wants it, okay, go ahead and get it. I think we see less problems with it.
If the mercury can be taken out, why haven't they taken out already just in case?
You know, that's a great question.
It's a preservative of some sort, isn't it?
It is. And so, yeah, if we were to market it differently, and I think it could be done. In fact, it was mandated to be done, but manufacturers are ignoring that regulation. In fact, the flu vaccine is also laden with mercury, and it was supposed to be taken out.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
And they're not taking it out?
No, they're not.
Is this an FDA legal mandate?
Well, I don't know how legal and mandated it is, but it was. It came out like 10 years ago that it's best not to have mercury in our vaccines.
So it was a suggestion, maybe.
Right. Now, since we got into vaccines, let me rehash what we've already covered about this thorny, prickly subject.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 1980, we vaccinated our kids as much as Europe, like a handful of vaccines, just the most important ones, polio, measles, tetanus, diphtheria, H flu, okay, just a handful. Mm-hmm. All right. Europe, for the most part, still vaccinating at that rate. But our vaccines have tripled. Our kids are pincushions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Now you tell me, is our health compared to Europe any different? and in the subsequent years after 1980? The answer is a rotund no, but if we were to get picky, we'd say Europeans are healthier, which can be argued that way. And so are we healthier because we are vaccinating three times more? No.
No, this is just suspicious to me. You know, it really does not sound right.
You mean what? What I said,
it doesn't sound right that they're getting so much vaccinations. It seems again, follow money. The money.
Yeah, exactly what it is.
Kind of disgusting, really. Yeah, but you know, and then again, we're paying twice as much for our pharmaceuticals than all these other countries. Well, there's so much of that money there that's suspicious.
Yeah, so you know, we like to beat up on Trump, but he's doing a good thing here. He is threatening to make the pharmaceuticals charge only as much as they charge abroad. That's a great start. Thing about vaccinations.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break for a few minutes and we'll be right back. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Want to write a book but don't want the challenges of developing time-consuming social media platform, costly private book promotions, complex email campaigns, and advertising commitments? If you write a book about your business, you don't need a mass audience. Focus on prospective clients with the best business card there is, your own book. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
By God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
Here's a great song from Lightstorm called Sweet Dreamer. It's short, but it can lift your spirits quite quickly.
Oh, yeah.
We're back on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show with Dr. Hugo Rodier. Doctor, we were discussing a little bit about the environment, and there's another, what's happening to people. Here's another thing that's completely, it's a little bit unrelated to that, but, we were talking about how the environment hurts children, might hurt children, according to that article. Well, there's another thing that hurts children, and that's, according to this article that was reported in Reuters, childhood abuse caused physical changes to the brain that leads to depression. And we were talking a lot about depression in our last show. Let me just read you a paragraph or two, okay?
All right.
This is from Matt Mathias, pointed out by Reuters. Abuse during childhood may cause physical changes to the human brain that in turn may render adults more vulnerable to depression. Researchers concluded in a study involving magnetic resonance imaging. The study was published in the April 1st issue of the Lancet Psychiatry. Could you, first of all, could you explain what this, how this works, magnetic resonance imaging?
Well, sure.
Yeah,
it's a step above the CT, which is X-rays. And so now the magnetic resonance is not X-rays. It makes atoms vibrate, which creates an image pattern.
Wow.
And so, right. So it's not, you're not getting radiated with an MRI. So
I see.
You should always choose an MRI over a CT if given a choice. I mean, there are some things that the CT is better for. So I'll never forget this guy came in and he didn't have insurance. So I offered him a CT because it's a lot cheaper for some imaging. I forget. I think it was his head. And he said, absolutely not. I mean, he was just even aggressive. I said, why? Well, I know why, because a CT is half the radiation people were exposed to in Hiroshima.
Really?
Yes. And so this guy says, well, I'm a sales representative for a CT company.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he knew all the data and he knew about Hiroshima, all that stuff. So, look, I'm not saying don't do a CT. I mean, if your life depends on it, yeah, you want to have it. But I wouldn't be doing them just for the heck of it, right?
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, the thing about trauma in childhood, we've known for decades. I mean, this is old stuff. And I'm glad to see that articles keep coming out about it because people forget. But this is all about the HPA axis.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. The hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. And so the hypothalamus is the bedpan of the brain, if you will. And hanging there is the pituitary. So anything emotional or mental going on, especially trauma, will cause the hypothalamus to, you know, run with those issues. And that influences the pituitary, the master endocrine gland hanging at the bottom of the brain, which sends a whole lot of hormones downstream to the body. But mostly it affects the adrenals, the adrenal glands, the glands of stress, which themselves put out 32 hormones. So you can see the devastating effect that traumatic events can have in childhood. And I'm looking at another study here put out by the Department of Public Health in New Hampshire. And then yet another one talking about how levels of cortisol, which is one of the main stress hormones put out by the adrenals, affect cognitive function, not just in children, but in adults, affecting memory and thinking skills. Of course, children will be more susceptible. And then this pattern can affect a whole lot of things in adulthood. In fact, when I see people come in with a host of problems, 5 to 10 to 15 drugs, I know the HPA axis has been messed up in childhood. And so I ask the question, tell me about your childhood. I'm yet to be wrong.
Can the HPA be affected by like divorce, marital problems, things like that?
Well, absolutely. But, you know, I don't want to make it sound like any stress is going to kill you, because some stress can make you stronger. And we can get into the philosophy of all that, right?
Yeah.
I would say that any stress, even childhood stress, we can pretty much divide it into the laws of threes. One third, it's really toxic, it's going to mess you up. One third, no difference. And one third is going to make you better. So we always hear cases of kids that grow up in horrible environments and become stalwarts in society and amazing people. So we got to put this whole HBA axis into perspective as well.
Isn't there something, I don't know exactly the full term, but it's the fragility factor, right?
Yeah, other people call it resilience. And that goes to, you know, so many other factors. I like to believe in more metaphysical explanations, like we are divine sparks of that amazing divine light. And we're part of it. And some of us are more aware of it than others. Some of us are born trailing sparks of that divinity. And they become very, very amazing people despite trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, I do believe that the psyche, when isolated from that divine spark, becomes defective in quite a number of different ways, including physical ways.
Exactly.
Our whole world is... has lost something. I mean, I'm talking about the leadership in this world has lost something called conscience, which I do believe is sort of a mirror of that spark.
Well, their pedagoguery, you know, they think because they're smart and went to Harvard, with all due respect to Harvard graduates, you know, they think they know. And yeah, they know in a very materialistic way, in a very intelligent way. But hey, what about wisdom? You know, you don't learn wisdom in books.
That's right.
I mean, a little, you know, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the, they've lost access to the higher part of their awareness, which everybody has potentially, which
exactly.
is the awareness of spirit in
exactly.
one language or another.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that we talked about this in along with stress, you know, because we don't want to make it sound like, you know, stress is bad all the time, you know.
Well, I think a lot of the things that people think about themselves are framed in a way that their very thought patterns are such that they isolate themselves from that spark. And one of them is a kind of elitist feeling, a feeling that because they're in some kind of socioeconomic or intellectual situation that they're better than everyone else. And that leads to a loss of conscience, really, because their empathy is restricted to their class.
Yes, and I see that everywhere, and I mean everywhere, and I just will not kiss their rings, and so I get in trouble all the time.
Yeah, well, it's just it's certainly in the leadership we have in this world right now. It's an epidemic. I don't know if we can get a vaccine for it.
I'm sure you'd make a lot of money if you found one.
Well, nobody would use it because it would be an ethical vaccination.
But I have such contempt. I have to check myself, you know, because at some level, you know, they're just like us and they deserve respect. And yeah, I do. I'm respectful around them, but no, I'm not going to kowtow.
Well, I will just to take a little bit of going a little further. What I saw when they kicked out these people from who were trying to protect the Venezuelan embassy. Did you see that?
No. Tell me.
There was a group. Code Pink was part of it. They were in the Venezuelan embassy at the request, or not at the, with the permission of the Venezuelan official government, the real government of Venezuela, to stay there and keep our government from taking over the embassy and putting in the followers of Guaido, who is the sort of the opposition, the non-elected opposition that we decided he was the interim president, the United States did. And so the Secret Service and the Washington, D.C. police worked to get these people out. First, they just stayed there while the opposition cursed at them and threw things at them and so forth. And later on, they started to arrest people, and finally, they just kicked everybody out. And that's against the Geneva Accords, you know, the Geneva Convention that was decided that you cannot go into another country's embassy, even if you're at war with them. But they decided they just appoint somebody else from a different country. So it got me very, very, very upset.
That's terrible.
You know, it's terrible to see what's going on in Venezuela, but to see it go on, you know, right in your own backyard, that much of a violation of international law. And I believe that I have to keep a sort of unconditional respect for everybody's sacred nature. And so I don't want to be angry and want to do something really, you know, violent out of that lower nature.
but it really got me mad to see our rights and other people's human rights being violated so conspicuously.
Yeah, that's terrible. Thanks for sharing. It reminds me of what I read the Chinese saying last week. Nothing new. The U.S. are bullies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm not proud to be part of that bullying prerogative. You know, it's just like a bullying initiative. It's just everywhere now with so many different countries. Well, we will move on to something completely different. Yeah, this is very disappointing to me. The workplace wellness programs are largely ineffective, according to a New York Times article, which reports on a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which found that workplace wellness programs prompted, quote, no significant difference in outcomes like lower blood pressure, sugar levels, and other health measures, and, quote, no significant reduction in workers' health care costs. The study offered 20 random wholesale club, BJ's Wholesale Club outlets, a wellness program for employees, then compared the results with 140 stores without such programs. What?
Yeah, I saw that. Well, it's a very flawed report. Number one.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Number one, we've known that the token programs that are being offered at the workplace are no more than checking your blood pressure, see how much you weigh, let's check your blood. And so, in essence, it's what the insurance companies offer, okay? And so, are they truly getting into health? Are they truly making people aware they're addicted to sugar? Are they dealing with the stresses of the work itself? And so I say no, most of those it's the same thing that it was shocking to learn that school lunch programs are not working. Well, of course they're not working. When you give them a few token veggies, the kids throw it in the garbage and they head right over to the vending machine around the corner to get their M&Ms and Coke. And so, you know, when people are addicted to sugar, you can talk to them all you want until you start to reach at that core issue. Why are you addicted? What's driving you to addictions? There is no improvement. In fact, another related article is the one that showed, and we've known this for decades as well, that the only way to lower the consumption of refined sugars is taxing. We learned that with the tobacco problem in the 80s. The only thing that has helped decrease tobacco consumption is taxing of the tobacco. And so to think that you can give employees a little lecture on this and that and not make them aware that they're addicts is not going to work. So I'm not surprised.
But wouldn't it be nice if you wouldn't exclude the possibility that a wellness program, which would be quite different than this, could be effective, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I would like to design a health program and see what happens.
I think that's a great idea.
We're given this report without really knowing what those health programs were. In fact, I have a sneaky suspicion that one of the purposes of studies like that is to discredit health programs. Like, you would want to discredit anyone who keeps saying that nutrition should be the basis of healthcare.
Very interesting. What we're going to do is take a break and we'll be right back.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Dr.
Dr. Hugo Rodier has published 4 books on health issues covering practically all chronic health problems. You may find them by accessing his website at hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. Gut health is the most academic, while switching off chronic disease is the most patient-oriented, with simple recipes to implement his nutritional protocols. Here's another song from Lightstorm, musical emissaries for a world of peace and spirituality. The song is called Creation.
Creation's like a movie scene reflected on a big white screen. The screen is called God's Spirit Love, the one creation's made up of. And our life is the story scene superimposed upon the screen. Our life becomes involved and blind, and we forget it's all a dream, just like old movies we have seen. It's funny how we laugh and cry, involved with pictures rolling by.
Hi, we're back on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show with Dr. Rodier, and we're going to talk about sitting for long periods. Sitting for long periods may make people resistant to metabolic benefits of exercise. Wow, this is from the New York Times, where it reports that Researchers found in a small study that people who sat for long periods and took fewer than 4,000 steps a day developed metabolic problems even if they exercised. The study suggests that sitting for most of the day could make us resistant to the usual metabolic benefits of exercise. Is there a watch that you can use to count the steps?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, okay. There's even apps for your phone.
All right.
So we've known about this for quite a while. In fact, the numbers that stick in my head are if you sit for 30 minutes, you got to get up for 90 seconds. I just tell patients 2. And otherwise, you're going to run into this problem even though you exercise. And our bodies are just not made to vegetate. And by metabolic problems, we need to translate that. We mean prediabetes, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular problems, and pretty much every health problem, because metabolism or the consumption of energy is at the heart of all cellular function. You know, our cells need energy to function. So if you're not processing energy well, then this goes for food too, of course. But activity, sitting has been now called the new smoking. It can be
really?
Yes. It can be that toxic. So I tell people, look, if you sit for 30 minutes, get up for 2. Go get your own damn coffee at work. You know, if you're sitting watching TV, get up to do something. Go out, see what your dog is doing. You just don't sit there all the time.
This is what I do. It's like, I work on the computer all the time, and I have to because everything I do is, a lot of it's connected to the computer. But whenever I feel like, oh, well, you know, I get a little bit tired, and that usually happens not too often, like 20 minutes, half an hour, I get up and do chores, I do exercise, I meditate, I do a lot of different other things, I organize things, you know, in my office. And I get up and, because I have found that it just completely destroys my ability to concentrate to sit that long anyway, and I don't feel good.
Well, that's what I mean by metabolism. It turns out that your brain is the organ that consumes 25% of the energy of your body. So, yeah, you're going to cogitate better if you get the blood pumping. And, I mean, we all know that, right? We don't need a study to say our minds get a bit foggy if we just sit there.
But so I was a total workaholic, I didn't pay attention to my body. And I just sat there. And whether I was tired or not, because I thought it was my obligation. And now I realize how completely ridiculous that was.
Well, youth is wasted on the young.
Churchill.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people are coming up with creative ideas like walking desks. So now you can set up a desk under a treadmill under a desk, you know, elevated a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, all the time I wouldn't do it, you know, but have that option. And, you know, when at the office, you know, a lot of people work in offices, don't ride the elevator, you know, when you go get something, go up and down the stairs. It's been shown that little bits of exercise here and there, like 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, it's just as good as if you lumped all those minutes together and went out and for a run. So it's very encouraging. You know, I don't want to make people feel like this is bad news, because the good news is that little bursts of exercise, like going up the stairs, doing some stretches on the floor here and there, even stretching at the desk, and those minutes add up. And so they could add up to 30, 50, 60 minutes a day, and that's pretty good.
Yeah, and it makes you feel better. It really does. Well, here's a sort of a depressing little article here. 4 million children get asthma annually due to polluted air, and this is from Newsweek. It reports that according to a new research published in the journal Lancet Planetary Health, around 4 million people develop 4 million children develop asthma each year because they breathe in polluted air, with the U.S. ranking third worst in the world when it comes to suffering the burden of minors being exposed to traffic fumes. These 4 million cases amount to for around 13% of all newly diagnosed cases of asthma in children worldwide. About 64% of these children lived in urban areas, the data revealed. And this is from the U.S. News and World Report, which says that the 5 cities in the United States with the highest percentage of pediatric asthma cases attributed to pollution include Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Las Vegas, and Milwaukee. I'm surprised that Salt Lake City isn't there.
It should be, because we're number one or two in the nation.
Yeah, in terms of pollution. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I began to work as a chairman of the Environmental Committee for the Utah Medical Association in the 90s. It's very frustrating. I began to talk about this, not only pollution hurting your lungs, but every organ of the body, the brain, the heart, circulation, your immune system, your endocrine system. Yeah, why would the lungs be the only ones? Yes, they're the ones that take the brunt of the pollution, but once absorbed, breathed, all those pollutants go all over the body. But so I began to talk about air pollution in Salt Lake City. I was treated as a burnt out hippie, you know?
Oh, my. That must have been insulting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to be green. Ask Kermit the Frog and the Hulk.
Sorry.
And so I kept fighting the battle, and I kind of eased up on it when I began to see the whole idea of air pollution taking track in Salt Lake City. So who doesn't know that air pollution kills now in Salt Lake City? So I began to talk about, I don't mean to change the subject, the lack of water, scarcity. And I was told at the UMA that water has nothing to do with health, really. Then that's when I quit.
Wow.
The point being that we're getting better. We're getting better about the effects of pollution. And so again, asthma, kids, but let's not stop at that. The evidence is there that air pollution also raises blood pressure, creates vascular problems, neurologic problems, including Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and endocrine problems, even diabetes. Now, we have very good evidence that pollutants in the air and in the environment are now dubbed obesogens, meaning they can also contribute to obesity, chemicals, and, of course, diabetes. And so, yeah, that's why I'm a big environmental doctor, if you will. And of course, the best way to defend ourselves is to become politically active, work on the sources of pollution. Second, avoid pollutants, you know, filter your air, organic foods, filter your water. And third, eat a ton of veggies, because by doing that, you increase your ability to detoxify and the microbiome of the gut, which tells the liver how to detoxify.
Well, listen, doctor, we have to go now, but thanks for all your insights this week, and we're going to get to a lot more in our next program.
Well, thanks for having me, Johnny.
I'll see you next week.
All right.
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com.
We will now go out with one more song by Lightstorm called Children of Love.
Children of love, help ever, hurt never, yeah, that is the way. For all of God's children to live. But never, oh, let come what may. Our nature's to love and to give. God is love, and love is God. We are His children. Children of love, God is love, and love is God. We are His children, children of love, children of love. As Swami would say, let's be the example like Him.
Love all, serve all, let each heart portray. This silence that guides from within. God is love, and love is God. We are His children, children of love. Conquer our ego and mind. Love all, serve all, there's no more to say. Our true self will find.
Love is God.